Turn to Genesis. Did I say Genesis? Yeah, chapter 22. And get your finger in there, and we'll start there in just a minute. By the way, a dad came home one day, and he had this cool big toy that he had gotten at work. It was kind of a door prize thing, and he looked at his little kids, and he lined them all up, and he said, "This toy is special, and it's for somebody. So I just need to decide who it's for. I want you to help me decide who it's for." He says, "Who's the most obedient?" He said. And they kind of looked at him like they didn't know what to say. Who never talks back? And then again, they looked at him like they didn't exactly know what he was getting at. Who does everything mom says? And one of them piped up and said, "Well, that would be for you, Dad. It's your toy." I want to talk to you today about obedophobia, fear of obedience. There probably isn't anyone in this room who panics at the thought of obedience. I doubt that anybody is. Maybe I started this message and just now a feeling of terror and dread ran through your heart because you're afraid of obedience. But I really doubt that that's the case. While most people wouldn't say they're really afraid of obedience, I think most people would also say that the idea of having to obey does not necessarily conjure up the most pleasant thoughts that you've ever had. Like, you don't obey and then have that feeling of, "Oh, yay, I get to obey." By the way, my wife's not in here today. I don't know if I can get away with this or not. Well, I did it, so you'll have to forgive me. But we were in line at the grocery store the other day. And, you know, there was a lot going on, and she had a lot on her mind. And she's unloading the cart, and I move over in front of her, and I'm standing by. It's at Meijer, so if you've ever been there, they have the conveyor belt, and then the girl checks it, you know, and then it goes into a bag, and then the bag's on a rotating thing. And so the girl starts dumping stuff in the thing, and Lisa shoves the cart toward me, and she goes, "You can load the cart." And I looked at her, and I went, "I can? Oh, I can load the cart." I looked at the girl who was checking out, "I get to load the cart. I can load the cart." And my wife says, "I can't take him anywhere." I didn't even think about that I was going to be teaching this. I was just being goofy, which some people do, you know, really well. One does what one does best. But for most of us, obedience has always been something that we had to do and not so much that we wanted to do, right? Isn't that the way we generally think of obedience? And obedophobia is said to be, you know, fear of structures and systems and rules, and people feel trapped that they have to conform, and it doesn't feel good to them, and it creates an anxiety in them. So I wanted to talk a little bit about this idea of obedience and what is biblical obedience. And some of you have heard me mention these things before, so sorry if it's a repeat. The good news is this will be really nice for people who are looking at or listening to the series that we're creating to go with the book Obedophobia, or no, excuse me, Gotnophobia. And so anyway, let me just do this first. Obedience, definition. According to Googled it up, the state or quality of being obedient, that's obedience, the act of practicing to obey, dutiful or submissive compliance, military service demands obedience from its members, and then this sentence, this was the third thing that they put in dictionary.com. A sphere of authority or jurisdiction, especially ecclesiastical. And I thought, really? Especially ecclesiastical. Well, now, ecclesia, we talked about church just last week. The church, the ecclesia, the gathering of God. And the world has a picture of obedience as being very much tied to the church and to church people and to Christian people and to religious people. They're the obedient ones. And I'm not sure that they mean that in a very complimentary way sometimes. The word obedience mentions compliance. If the world thinks that we as Christians are just these very compliant, dutiful, you know, hard-nosed kind of people, is that drawing them to God the way they ought to be drawn to God? Are you going to tell us, Pastor, we don't have to be obedient? No, not at all. I'm going to tell you how to be obedient, and you're going to like it, or else. No, just kidding. But that's kind of how we've been with obedience, isn't it? You're going to like it or else. Well, the word obey is, let me just read that to you real quick, to comply with or to follow the commands. Wow. And then the second one starts out again, to comply with or follow a wish or a restriction of things. The car obeyed my turn. Just so quickly responded. The idea of complying is the biggest thing that we have in the idea of obedience. And most people aren't in love with having to comply with restrictions and do what they're told. Usually you tell your kids, do what you're told, when it's obvious they don't want to do what they're told. And so I've wondered to myself a little bit, how do these attitudes affect our attitude toward God? What if I told you that biblical obedience looks a whole lot different than the definitions that I've given up to this point? Well, now, chapter 22. I want to read one verse. And it's verse 18 of Genesis chapter 22. And this is God speaking to Abraham. And he says real simply, in your seed, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed because you have obeyed my voice. So do you know what? Maybe if you've already kind of glanced down at it, do you know what Abraham had just done to obey God's voice? Anybody remember? In this chapter, Abraham had just been told by an angel, stop! As he was raising a knife and getting ready to come down on his son of promise, Isaac, and sacrifice him as a burnt offering to the Lord. And God said, stop! I see now that you're an obedient person. And I was looking at that one day and I thought, The Hebrew word translated obey here is the word shama. And this is the first time that shama is translated obey in the Bible. But it's not the first time shama appears in the Bible. I found that fascinating. The first time, because I got curious, I got to this word and I thought, when has anybody else obeyed before this moment in biblical history? Go all the way back to Adam and Eve. And I didn't find in the New King James Version or very many other versions any place where the word shama appeared and was translated obey. The first time somebody obeyed was Abraham? Really? That was the first time Abraham obeyed? And up till that point, Abraham had never obeyed in his life before? Well, it wasn't written that he obeyed, but... And I thought, what's the deal with that? That doesn't make sense to me. How come we haven't seen the word obedience for the first 22 chapters of the book? Wow. Was it possible that from Adam to Abraham, obedience was an idea that hadn't come up until finally Abraham did it for the first time? Wow, that would be kind of weird. So I started looking at other translations, and again, I didn't see the word obey anywhere before chapter 22 in almost any translations. But it's not the first time the word shama, the Hebrew word, was actually written in the Bible. Let me read one of them to you from Genesis chapter 3. That's pretty early, isn't it? And it's actually the first time that shama shows up in the Bible, and here's what it says. Listen for the word obey, okay? Are you ready to listen for the word obey? Listen for the word obey as I read this verse. They heard the sound of the Lord walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and the man and the wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord among the trees of the garden. Where did I say obey? I didn't. But I did say shama. At least the word shama in the original language is there. Let me read it to you and I'll insert shama for you. They shamed the sound of the Lord God walking in the garden in the cool of the day. It's translated heard. Oh, that's interesting. They heard. When they heard God, were they compliant? Well, they heard his voice, but what were they doing? They were hiding. They had messed up and they knew it and they were hiding and they heard his voice, but they weren't being compliant, were they? That's interesting. But let's look at another verse to help clear it up just a little bit. This is in Genesis chapter 16. And God is having a conversation with Hagar, who had a child by Abraham before the child of promise, Isaac. His name was Ishmael. You remember that story? And God and her are communicating through an angel. The angel of the Lord said to her further, "Behold, you are with child, and you will bear a son, and you shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has given heed to your affliction." The word shama there is translated given heed. The Lord has shamad your affliction. The Lord has heard your affliction. The Lord has obeyed your affliction. Whoa, wait a minute. That doesn't work, does it? The Lord complied with what you wanted. That doesn't work for us, does it? We're not comfortable with God complying to her. She should be complying to God. God's in charge. He's large and in charge. She's just, you know, if he wants to be nice to her, that's his business. But he's not going to be run by any woman. Well, I think what we need to understand is that the Lord wasn't obeying in the sense of compliance. And by the way, he's not looking for us to obey. Excuse me. He's not looking for us to obey in the sense of compliance. God's not looking for a bunch of people who want to comply with him. What? See, we think of it as a forced behavior. You have to do what somebody tells you to do. How many of you know God gave us a free will? We don't have to do what God told us to do. But we're pretty smart if we do. God's more interested in relationship than he is with compliance. Listen to this verse from Isaiah. "Therefore the Lord said, inasmuch as these people draw near me with their mouths and honor me with their lips, but they have removed their hearts far from me, their fear toward me is taught by commandment of men." God doesn't want you to be sitting down on the inside when he tells you to, or sitting down on the outside when he tells you to sit down, but standing up on the inside. Have you ever had a child like that? Anybody besides me? Have a child like that? They're doing what you told them to do, but they're only doing what you told them to do because they think they have to, but they are not going to do it the second you tell them they don't have to because they do not want to comply with you. God looks on the heart. So compliance is not biblical obedience. What? Yeah, that messes you up, doesn't it? Compliance is not biblical obedience. If God, by the way, only desires our compliance, how many of you think that in an instant God could decide, "I'm going to have compliance"? And we would all sudden, with our free will removed from us, began to do exactly what he told us to do, like little robots. If God came into the room at a level that was beyond my imagination, probably at this point, and we all saw him, we might actually find ourselves complying, whether we wanted to or not. But that's not what God's after. We were created for relationship. So when Abraham was prepared to offer up Isaac, the Bible said he did so knowing that God, his friend, would raise Isaac from the dead. Listen to this verse from Hebrews. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, Isaac, in Isaac shall be your seed. Concluding that God was able to raise him up, even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. They had this relationship thing going on. And when God told Abraham to do something, he didn't just do it because he was afraid that God might whack him or hurt him or do something to him. He did it because they were in relationship. That's maybe different than we've thought of it for most of our lives. My son, when he was five, needed a shot. He needed one of those, you know, shots they give little kids so that they can vaccinate them or whatever you want to call it. He needed a shot. And we went to the place that was giving the shots, and the nurse said to me, all right, we're going to have to give you a shot. And he heard that, and how many of you know how excited he was then? Oh, I get to have a shot. I get to have a shot. Nah, not really. And so, you know, he was already starting to squall. And by the way, Josh was not a little five-year-old. There was never a time in Josh's life, it seems like, when he was little. He was a big kid. And so we knew we were going to have a little bit of a fight here, so she had me set him on my lap, and then I sat him here, and I put my arms around him, and I took his one arm, and I shoved it underneath my arm here, and his little arm was sticking out behind so that she could get to it. And, of course, he started not being happy about this situation, and I'm hugging him, and I'm telling him, it's going to be all right, it's going to be all right. And he's like, no, you know, and he's not happy. And she's walking around behind us, and he starts kicking his little legs, not so little legs. He was doing severe damage to my shin bones that day, just kicking like this, you know. And I'm just holding on to him, and I'm trying to say, it's okay, it's okay. And she gets behind him, and he's yelling, and he's not very happy. And she gives him a shot, and he's yelling, and he's not very happy. And she comes around front, she looks at him, she says, I'm done. And he's yelling, and he's not very happy. And I whisper in his ear, she's done, Josh. And he's yelling, and he's not very happy. And I push him off my lap, and I hold him in front of me. I said, she's done. And he starts going, he didn't even feel it. He was in such angst and screaming, and he didn't feel a thing. It was crazy. As adults, we make decisions for our kids, you know, like an immunization like that. It's something that we think they have to have because we know that that little needle prick, which I don't like them either. Anybody here just love getting shots? It's like, oh yeah, bring them on. Hey, can I have some more shots today? some of you have had a lot of them, way more than I can even begin to imagine. But you don't love them. But, you know, some of you have gotten used to them, by the way, haven't you? It's like, yeah, whatever. Yeah. You don't even react. I mean, I know people, they don't even notice when they get a shot. But, you know, they're not pleasant. But as adults, we make sure that our kids get them sometimes, right? Because why? Because we don't want them sick later. That's the thing. We want them to be well. And I think our Heavenly Father sometimes lets us experience things that don't seem so pleasant at the time.
I'm having trouble connecting to the internet.
Are you really? You're just stuck without, sweetie. What can I tell you? I love that. Are you an obedient? No, never mind. I got a different little unit, so it's new. It's new here. It doesn't know not to talk out during the service. I'm going to have to get back to where I was, but I'm not even sure I can get there by now. You know, God, by his nature, is love. How many of you know the Bible says God is love? So what God does, he does out of his nature. If God does something, it's because he loves. John, 1 John 4:8 says God is love. Some Christians, I think, serve a schizophrenic God, though. Like, God's not always loving when he does what he's doing. Well, he can't be loving when he's angry. Actually, he can. Just because we don't know how to be loving when we're angry doesn't mean God can't be loving when he's angry. But let me give you an example of love that's a little angry. Have any of you ever had a bee or a wasp or something with the ability to sting climbing on the car seat of your child? I'm not angry at the wasp. I'm not angry at the bee. But I am full of wrath because I want to protect my child. And the bee will experience my wrath, even though I like honey and I would rather the bee lived. But if that bee keeps buzzing around my kid, my wrath is going to come out because I am love and I love my kid. If God's the embodiment of love, then he wants to have us in a relationship that is more like shama, hearing, than it is compliance, just doing and not really doing it because we love him back. Does that make sense to everybody? It's a big deal. Bill Johnson likes to say, God can't think of something stupid for you to do. If God's asking you to do something, it's not an opportunity to control you. It's an opportunity to bless you. Yeah. What if we could start thinking of it that way? So, I need somebody to help me out here. Hey, Jacob, can you do me a favor? Yeah, come on over here. Notice that Jacob came over here and he didn't say no. Okay, sit down on the floor right here. All right. Really good. Okay. Yeah, I'm just putting Jacob in a place where he can just be obedient. Notice that he's being obedient. Maybe he's even being compliant because he doesn't want to embarrass me or something or feels bad for me. Hey, Jake, can you see anything under the chair from where you're sitting? Under this chair? You can't, huh? Nothing underneath here? Can't see anything underneath there, huh? Look carefully.
Oh.
Why don't you, can you see something? Can you grab it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Would you like to have that? There's actually two of them there. You don't want to what? You feel bad about it? Okay, your mom wants it. Would you take it to her? Yeah. Just help me out. Don't feel bad. Just agree with me on this one, okay? It's a good idea. Yeah, take it off there. Yeah, get the tape off. Okay. Yeah. This is going to take him forever. It won't go this way. It'll just go down and hit him. That wouldn't be good. How you doing, Jake? Okay. It's not that hard, Jake. Seriously, Jake, this is way harder than it's supposed to be. Okay. What's there, Jake? Yeah. Two tens. That's yours, dude. You can go back to your seat. He's trying to. You can go back to your seat now. Agree with me, Jake. Give him a hand. If Jake had sat there in his chair and he'd said, "Nah, I don't really want to come up there," I'd have called on somebody else. Because Jake agreed to come up, he wasn't being compliant in the sense of doing something that, you know, was really hard or whatever. It may have not been that pleasant for him. I don't know what he was feeling exactly. I don't know what was going on inside of him. I just know because he cooperated with me, because he heard my voice and he responded to the voice, he was able to come up here where he was able to find something that he couldn't have seen from where he was. Sometimes God moves us in ways that we don't expect. And sometimes we feel like we're complying at first. And in the whole time, what was God thinking? I want to bless them with something good. Wow. Let me just give another example to just kind of try to set this in, because I want to get this in your heart and mind. Back in 2010, we had a firestorm here. Some of you remember Kevin Dedman came and we did this firestorm conference, and it was really a lot of fun. But right when we planned on having the firestorm conference, guess what they did with Route 24? Yeah, they picked our church up off 24 and moved our whole church. No, actually, it was worse. They moved all of 24. And so people are on their way to our church, and we're advertising this conference, and they're on Google. How many of you use GPS? On Google, we were still on 24, but if you followed Google, you ended up on the east side of town instead of the west side of town. It was all messed up. We were having this problem because the new highway had just changed everything. And so we sent out information and tried our best. And the day of the thing, Joan's in there and the phone's ringing and people are calling and they're trying to figure out how to get to the church. We told them ahead of time, don't use your GPS. And people were like, yeah, we use our GPS and we're over by Napoleon. You know what? They didn't obey. Well, we really weren't asking them to obey. We were asking them to hear our voice and understand that they were going to end up in the wrong place if they didn't do what we said. Why? Because we wanted to control them? No. We didn't want to control anybody. We just wanted to save them a few miles and get them here on time for the first session. It's that simple. This is biblical obedience. I'm going to say something that might sound a little controversial, but I want you to listen to it and think it through with me. God would never ask you to do something that you don't want to do. You're having to think about that, aren't you? He may ask you to do something you think you don't want to do. But he would never ask you to do something that you didn't really want to do. And after you did it, you're glad. See, it's our stinking thinking that thinks, I don't want to do that. But God knows better. He knows what we're designed to do. And if he tells you to do something, it's definitely because you were made to do that thing. And that there's a bigger purpose and a better plan and something very important about you doing what you're doing when he tells you to do it. Does this make sense to anybody but me? Yeah, God, who knows the end from the beginning, knows all this stuff. Let me ask you a question. Did God trick Jesus into coming down to the earth and dying for us? No. Did Jesus want to die? He did say, if there's any other way we can do this, Lord. Then he said, nevertheless, not my will, but thy will be done. I can see why Jesus wasn't maybe super excited about, you know, he wasn't down there going, oh, I get to go to the cross. I get to go to the cross. Yeah, probably not. I get that. But what does the scripture say? Looking to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising its shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. Wow. He knew what was going to happen. But he did it because he saw the joy on the other side. Again, Coach Earhart knows some days those kids do not want to practice. They do not want to run. But they endure, especially cross country. Man, is that endurance. It's a long practice. And they do what they do in cross country because they have a goal in mind. And they suffer a little bit in a sense. They practice, they work hard for the joy that is set before them. The goal of winning. That's why we run the race. That's how it works. Yeah, some days. Most days, like all of them, they really are like, yeah, can we skip practice today? But yeah, when they reach the end and they know the result, it's worth it. That's what happens. I still remember being a band kid in my first competition as a seventh grader. We had to march 7 through 12 in our band just to have enough people to put on the field. And I remember being in Marietta, Ohio, thinking, I've been working my tail off since August, band camp, a whole week of band camp, and every day afterwards, and doing all the stuff. And it's finally like mid-September, and we're in Marietta, and I'm thinking, ah, here we go, first competition. And I go out there, and we do our competition, and I'm done, and everybody's feeling pretty good about how we did, but I still don't know what that means until we get to the end of the night, and they call our band, and we won it all. And then I understood, oh, this is why we're working our tails off. I was in after that. I was in. When we got to throw our hats and scream, yeah, I was in. This is cool. When my wife Lisa and I first met, she didn't want to marry a preacher. And then when I ended up being a preacher, she didn't want to leave Southern Ohio. Now we're really glad we followed God's plan and not ours. That's all I can tell you. But when you first think about things, sometimes God says he's going to do something and you're thinking, oh, I can't do this. Yes, not only can you, but you'll be glad you did. And that's biblical obedience. When we begin to understand that God asks us to do things because he has in mind our greatest possible blessing, we come to the place where we realize that Jesus does have an easy yoke. I'm not saying it's not still a yoke. I'm just saying it starts to become easy when we realize the decision's already made. I know what I'm supposed to do. Whatever he's telling me to do, that's what I'm going to do. Do you know a whole lot of your anxiety is all balled up in deciding whether or not you're going to do what God's asking you to do? I have sweat for months before, worried about what God was asking me to do, only to find out when I did it, it wasn't bad at all. And then I'm just going to mention this briefly. There's more about it in my book. But do you know there are those times when you're asked to do something and you're thinking, I don't want to do that? Like maybe your wife and kids ask you to do something and you got better things to do, guys. You know, you got things, we got chores that need done. I got to go over here and do this. And really, I don't know that I'm all that excited about, you know, doing this today. But then your kids are begging you, and you're like, okay, I'll do it. I don't really want to. But your kids draw you into agreement with them. And then when you end up doing what you do, you have so much fun. The kids have so much fun. Your wife has so much fun. Everybody had such a good time. And you realize, wow, this was way more important than that thing I thought I had to get done. Anybody ever have that happen? See, this is the resurrection principle. Sometimes the thing that we let die, like our plans, like the football game we were going to watch, and I decide not to watch the football game, I decide to go play frisbee with the kids, I end up having more fun, and when I come back and find out my team lost, I'm glad I didn't waste the time. It can be like that. See, obedience is like that. If we would really truly understand the power of resurrection, we would understand that anything we give up in quote-unquote obedience, what happens to the kernel of seed that's planted? It grows into the ear of corn. You always get more when you give something up and let it die than you can ever get when you try to hang on to what you want instead of what God had in mind. Does this make sense to anybody but me? Okay. So, when we enter into that Shammah relationship with God, who is perfect love, his perfect love casts out fear. So we don't have a fear of obeying. In fact, we become joyfully obedient instead of begrudgingly compliant. I want to walk my life joyfully obedient. I don't want to walk my life begrudgingly compliant. I don't think I get any extra points with God if he goes, well, you did everything I told you to do. I know you hated the whole thing. I don't think, in fact, I'm even going to make it into heaven if that's my attitude, quite honestly. And because of that, Jesus said, I no longer call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends, for all things that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. So biblical obedience can maybe be summed up in this word, partnership. Partnership. Rather than thinking that God is angry at me all the time and tapping his toe because I didn't do it exactly the way he wanted and ready to hit me with a bolt of lightning, maybe I ought to understand that he loves me and he's just looking for a way to get me in line with all the blessings that he's been waiting to give me. If I could just get you to go over here, I could line up all these blessings and boom, 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 boom. You'd be so blessed. Fear is doing it all that it can. The operating system of fear is doing all that it can to keep us from becoming who God created us to be, to limit us in some place in our lives, to take away from us what God intended for us, to keep us from practicing enough to actually win when we get into the race. That's what the enemy wants to do. But as we say no to the fear of obeying God, then we will be able to say yes. And the more we say yes, the more we'll stop fear in its tracks, and we'll stop being robbed of what God has for us.